Welcome to Modern Practice. On this episode, we'll continue our discussion on the new macro rule for 2021. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and we're bringing you excerpts from the recent Vizient Medical Leadership Series webcast. I was the host, and we featured Valinda Rutledge and Dr. Maddie McDowell from HG2 to outline the latest changes from CMS. Let's take a listen to the second part of the webcast.
I'll continue with you, Valinda. So in reference to alternative payment models or APMs, what are advanced APMs and how do they qualify for an advanced APM, considering that CMS has actually been very transparent that the goal is that all organizations transition?
Right. Yes. And we've been hearing the last year that they would be having some additional advanced APMs because, as Maddie indicated, so few increases that you got if you stayed in MIPS. And Maddie and I was recently talking about it in one of the years, I think it was 2019, Maddie, if you got 100%, you only got 1.7% in MIPS because it's budget neutral. And so that just doesn't give you enough, especially in 2020, where you don't get a fee schedule increase. Mm-hmm. So if you are participating in advanced APMs, you get a 5% bonus. So that's much better than scoring 100% on MIPS and getting 1.7. So more and more physicians are looking at how can I participate in advanced APM and get a 5% bonus rather than work myself and my team off to get 100% and get 1.7%. So this year, they actually have launched several new ones. Direct contracting starts April 1st. Primary care first starts January 1st. And that's going to be a prospective payment, a capitated payment on the front end. Kidney care first starts January 1st. And we have our first mandatory bundle under the Trump administration. We had a previous one under the Obama administration, the Comprehensive Care for Joint Replacement. Now we have a radiation oncology one that will start July the 1st. They are planning on having more advanced APMs roll out over the next year, and they have indicated that some of them may actually be mandatory. They're looking at revising a bundle payment for Care Initiative Advanced and having some components of it be mandatory. So we're going to see more mandatory models. So I think we can expect, whether it's a Democrat or Republican leadership, we're going to see more mandatory models rolling out. And as an industry, we have to be prepared for it.
The important thing here is that the research shows, right, Valinda, that the mandatory bundles are the way to actually make significant dent in cost saving.
Yes.
So as reluctant as CMS is to put mandatory bundles out and providers don't like them, they're finding this is the direction we have to go if we're going to move the needle on cost.
Yes, because Maddie, what they do is the mandatory bundles a lot of times isn't in all the areas of the country. So CMS says they're random, but you need to understand random means with what denominator you've used. Okay. So if the denominator has been where's the high cost areas in the country in which there is very low participation in value-based model, that's what they go after. And as you said, that's where most of the savings. So they have targeted these mandatory models to the areas of the country that they see very little adoption of value-based models like bundle payments, like ACOs, and also areas of the country where variation in care, high-cost modalities, those kind of things they actually have targeted, and that has ended up giving them a lot more savings.
So let's go on to ACOs. What qualifies as an APM, and what changes can we see in them?
Alternative payment models, you have to participate in it to get the 5%. And what are the models that are classified as advanced APM? They have to have some financial risk assigned with it. It can't be a model in which you have no downside risk at all. So you do have to have some financial risk. Second is you have to have a percent of your revenue or patient counts that will be inside those models. And it can be a combination of Medicare fee-for-service, your MA, commercial, or any of your risk-based contracts with your MCOs. Now, what's interesting is it has stayed 50% payments or 35% of patients in 2019 and 2020. Unfortunately, in 2021, that percent goes up to 75% for the payments or 50% for the patients. Now, understand that a lot of people are having a lot of conversations with Congress, because it has to be at congressional level, CMS can't do this, about pushing that back. Could we get 1 year of delay? Because with COVID, people have had no time to sit down with a commercial payer about developing a risk-based contract. So there's a big push at the congressional level, and hopefully, let's keep our fingers crossed that they'll be able to pull that back and let us go back to what was in 2019 and 2020, and we won't have to reach that 75% to get that 5%. Because people do a lot of work with these models to get that 5%. And if they can't just get enough of their patients into those models, because they can't get those contracts, or CMS has just now started releasing these models, many providers are saying it's not their fault. And so they should get that relief toward that. So,
and also a reminder that the new APMs that are being released this year, they were all going to be released last year. We were talking about this last year. They were put on hold because of the pandemic. So another reason it's been a little more challenging for providers to ramp up to that 75%.
Yes.
Let's actually take things to another area where we see some, quite frankly, impressive changes going on. That's with the outpatient prospective payment system. Maddie, can you tell us about some of those changes?
Yeah, probably the most important change, and almost I would call it revolutionary change, a big change for the way we think about surgery, is the removal of the inpatient only list for surgeries. It will be transitioned over time, over 3 years, but beginning January 1 of next year, there will be a substantial number of procedures, 298, that will be taken off the inpatient-only list. What we're seeing with that ruling is that CMS really does not want to remain in the role of dictating site of care, so where surgery should be cared for. This is a larger move in terms of site-neutral payment. So something to pay attention to, that over time, we're going to see more of these types of changes and rules. Along the same lines, they've added a very large number, 278 procedures, that can now be paid for in the ambulatory surgery center, which is a much lower cost setting than the inpatient and hospital outpatient department. In addition to this, in the final rule, we have an increase in ASC payment rates, outpatient, both outpatient and ASC payment rates of about 2.4%. So another incentive to shift care to lower sites. And then finally, on another realm, they've maintained the rate reductions for the 340B program. They significantly reduced that, minus 22.5% in past years, and they've kept it that. They're not going to continue to reduce it further.
There was some major changes in the ACOs this year. So first of all, they want the ACOs to move away from CMS web interface to be able to submit their quality. And they wanted to actually sunset the web interface in 2021. Well, they got a lot of pushback from the ACOs. So CMS has said, okay, we'll keep CMS a web interface for a reporting until 2022, and then we'll retire it. However, in 2021, the ACOs will have two choices to make. The first one, you can do like what you've been doing for the entire time you've been in the ACOs, is do the CMS web interface with the 10 quality measures. It's something you know, it'll be familiar. However, if you move to the alternative payment model, you will only have six that you will be required to do. My feeling is if you can get the infrastructure down, it's probably best for you to move to the APP in 2021, because you're just kicking the can down the road. I'm not a big believer in kicking the can down the road. You might as well just take it on the chin, get it moved on, and get into what you're going to be required to. But they've said, you know what, if you want to do CMS web interface, and you want to do 10 quality indicators, you go right ahead. But we're giving you only one more year. They think that APP will be much easier than the CMS web interface. You only have a six. And in fact, when you look at the six, you will see that there's only three you have to present. So it's a much easier system, but sometimes change is difficult and people like to stay with the old way. So you can stay with the old way one more year. Then the second thing is, in the past, if you qualified for a shared savings, they would take whatever the percent of your quality was. So if your quality score was 90%, you would get 90% of your savings. CMS has said that's not fair, which I totally agree with them. And so now they're going to have what's called a cliff, which is if you achieve at least 30th percentile across all the quality performance categories, 30th percentile, then you get 100% of all of your quality. So all of your shared savings. So you won't have any of your savings taken away. So 30th percentile across all the categories for 21 and 22, and then they'll move it up to 40th. And most of the ACO should be able to reach the 30th percentile across all. So that will then have you be able to get 100% of your shared savings and not see 5 or 10% of it go away.
I believe also that in reference to some of the APPs, there's a comment that we wanted to say about that.
Yes, these are the six measures. There's only three of them that you will report. The rest of them are administrative claims, and they're going to give you full credit for the CAHPS score for 2021. So I know switching from a CMS web interface to a new system is not without its angst for all of us. And there are certainly sometimes additional builds you have to make. So I'm not minimizing it, but the sooner you get moved, I think it'll be easier for you.
Okay. So let's go back to the inpatient only list. We've seen actually that traditionally or historically, CMS has always been very judicious in making these decisions. They carefully choose what's on that list. But now, and then in reference to the market then responds a certain way in reference to care delivery. We've seen this radical change, if you will, or revolutionary is the word we used, and it advancing in with the thought that they're going to eliminate it all within 3 years, all per se. So what do we think are going to be the market changes from that?
Yeah, that's a great question. When CMS has taken procedures off the inpatient only list in the past, we have seen a significant rapid shift to the outpatient setting for surgery because it's paid for in the HOPD. And we saw this with hip replacement and knee replacement most recently. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit different. So the reason this is different is, one, it's a very large, long list of procedures. It wasn't very methodically thought about for years in terms of RVU and length of stay and innovation and technology. Essentially, it's a long list and eventually will be all of inpatient procedures that will be allowed to be in the HOPD. So we think the shift will be slower. But in addition to that, one of the main ways that the shift to hospital outpatient has occurred for surgeries is through the RAC audits for the two midnight rule. So if there were surgeries that were being done and patients were staying for very short length of stay, a day or a day and a half, they would be audited and oftentimes refused inpatient payment. Now, that is also going to be deferred during this time period. So there will be no accountability and forcing hospitals to shift patients to outpatient surgery centers for short length of stay conditions. Mm-hmm. So this was done deliberately to really let hospitals and providers decide what is the best site of care. But in the short term, we expect that to mean that there will be a much slower shift to the outpatient. And many of these hospitals will be just looking at where's the best site of care for this patient to be operated on and cared for.
A lot of great discussion. Ladies, any final thoughts?
Yeah. So, Tom, the one thing I would say that I was very thrilled to read about, as you know, the Medicare physician fee schedule is 2,100 pages, and I have now read it three times. So,
congratulations.
You both earned your place in heaven.
I'm such a policy nerd, so I apologize to everybody. But one of the things that they said in it that I thought was really exciting is that CMS is going to commission a study, and they are going to take the lessons that they have learned from telehealth, virtual health, and expanded scope of practice during the pandemic, and see what are the changes that need to be made in regulations going forward to allow innovation to continue. So I think that's really exciting. I also tell all of us here that any of the data that you have and the value that you have seen through the pandemic to allow expanded scope of practice, telehealth, get that data, give it to them to show the impact, the quality impact on your patients and what you're hearing from your patients that they want. And any innovative ideas that you have. We're in the midst of a major transformation in healthcare, moving from traditional sites of service like the hospital to non-traditional hospital at home, or as Maddie said, IPO, the inpatient only list, moving away. So this is an opportunity for us to put on our innovative thoughts, and CMS is saying, give us your ideas.
Yeah. And I'd add to that, I see three themes coming out of CMS that I don't see changing. What I see is a continued of these three themes. The first one being telehealth. We recognize now the value of telehealth through the pandemic. This will not go away. Seema Verma has indicated that. And what we'll see is more guardrails placed on it, but increased use of it. The second, and that commission study that Belinda mentioned, is one to really thoughtfully look at what is the best way to use telehealth going forward and what are the lessons learned. The second area of importance that I think is probably the biggest is this shift in understanding we really need to work on chronic disease and prevention. We've rewarded procedures and episodic-based care for decades. And now we're really seeing some teeth in terms of payment changes with the E&M codes. And this will have a big impact, hopefully, on increased time spent on managing those chronic diseases, which is desperately needed right now in our country. And then the third is this notion of site-neutral payment, that really looking at how do we pay for services equally across sites, or how do we allow for providers to determine where's the best site of care for this patient to be, rather than the government regulating those sites. So we're going to see more moves in that direction as well, which will have challenges in terms of revenue for hospitals and will really change some of the places in terms of where the main volumes are being, where patients are getting cared for over time.
Well, that's the end of this episode of Modern Practice. Our thanks to Dr. Maddie McDowell and Belinda Rutledge for their insights on the new macro rule. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.